If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, you are listening once again, or you're about to listen to, the next episode of Planet Porky, the podcast. And I want to thank you all for continuing to tune in to this podcast with myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, on a very regular basis now, Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, thank you very much indeed for joining me in the studio today. I shouldn't have to keep thanking you now because you've become such a regular part of this this podcast. And I think one thing we both want to say is the great responses we've had from people who are continuing to tune in.
Unbelievable. I've been so pleased with all the messages coming in.
It's been
in
lovely,
this
hasn't
past
it?
Week.
Yeah.
It's a really good interaction with listeners as well.
And it's terrific. I mean, I saw somebody last week was challenging your view on Julie Andrews versus, what was that?
Oh, no, it was, now you're asking.
Yeah.
It was Pauline Collins. Did Pauline Collins play Shirley Valentine?
That's right.
One chap was convinced that actually it wasn't her, that it was Julie Walters.
That's right.
I said, I think you might find.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was mixing it up with Educating Rita,
well,
which was Julie Walters. Same writer, of course.
Well, whatever. That's what the debate's all about. So I'm glad you put him right on that. And another
I like to put a guy straight.
Well,
you know?
Like to put the guy straight, yeah. Another satisfied listener. Now, the big showbiz story at the moment, and it happened a few days ago now, a week ago now, actually, but it's still going on because Mr. Weinstein is found himself in an awful lot of trouble for horrendous crimes that he's committed, and he's going to face another court in Los Angeles. We'll talk about all of that in a minute, but the first thing I want to talk to you about is I saw a fabulous documentary of old footage about Cilla Black this week. And whenever I read an interview with Cilla Black, done by usually a female journalist like yourself, you know, somebody right up at the top there, rock chick writer extraordinaire, it always seemed to happen in a luxurious penthouse somewhere in Westminster in London, and it seemed to happen over two or three bottles of champagne. So you knew Cilla in those terms, didn't you?
I did, and she had a house out in Denham as well.
Oh, Denham, yeah,
in
I know.
Buckinghamshire.
Marlow, near Marlow, that's
and
right,
And I went
yeah.
out there, there was a swimming pool, and you know, it generally involved sitting around the pool with a bottle of champagne, and Cilla always ended up in tears.
Yeah.
Because she missed her Bobby
so much. Always ended up in tears.
Yeah.
What a terrible burden to carry for the rest of your life.
And she did try to meet someone else, much like Esther Ranson. Do you remember she went on sort of a recruitment drive to find a new husband after Desmond died?
I didn't know that she went on a recruitment drive, but I do know because I knew him, the chairman of Reading Football Club, whose name I can never pronounce because he reverted back to his father's Polish name. He's a very wealthy man. He launched Auto Trader in this country, and he spent £40 million of his own money alone on Reading Football Club. And I still can't remember his name, but she used to be pictured at football matches with him. Very decent chap, by the way. But I think you're right. In the end, she simply couldn't find anybody to replace Bobby, could she?
The thing is, if you found the one, you're never going to find somebody else to replace the one.
Yes.
And in a way, why would you bother? You've had all those great years, wonderful children, fabulous lifestyle.
Yeah.
How could you possibly replace that?
Yeah, no.
And why would you bother looking?
I totally agree. She was my mum's favourite artist, and don't want to be maudlin, but my mum died sort of 18 months ago at the funeral, and the song to which we saw her out was Cilla Black's "You're My World, You're My Night and Day." You are my world, you are my night and day.
Do the alto middle eight.
No, I can't. But you know, what's it all about, Alfie?
She was an amazing singer.
And my mum loved her because my mum was from Birkenhead. Cilla Black was from across the water in Liverpool. Her name originally was Priscilla
White.
That's right, and she changed it to Black. And on this Bobby thing, you know, this is very interesting because I met them once at the Daily Express. they came in to have lunch with Sir Nicholas Lloyd, my editor.
Sir Lick Noyd.
Yes, Sir Lick Noyd, absolutely. and he called me up to his office, which is right at the top of the building there, you know, to meet them in the executive dining room. And he thought that as a fellow Scouser, which I'm not because I come from Chester, that, you know, I could talk parlay with him and all that kind of stuff. But as soon as Scylla realised I was from Chester, you know, not really.
No.
Yeah, she said, hey, that's a lot of laughs and all that kind of stuff. But it was clear that her and Bobby were a terrifically tight couple. But if you remember that three-part series on Scylla a couple of years ago, and she actually admitted this in an interview she did about the series, she stopped Bobby from becoming a singer in his own right when he was a bakery worker because she thought the limelight should continue to be focused on her.
And she was not the only one to think that, actually. I'm sure I told you the story about when I was working on a book with Linda McCartney.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And it was a great book. It had a fantastic title.
Right.
It was going to be called Mac the Wife.
Mac the Wife.
And
wow,
I used to go down to Peasmarsh to their house and work with Linda at the kitchen table until one day, about 3 months in, Paul came in and he wanted a word and off she went. And she came back quite tearful and said, we can't proceed with this.
There's only one star in this family.
Exactly.
Is that right?
And I think that that is the case in a lot of these partnerships, that you can only have one who is in the limelight and the other one who brings up the rear. Mm. And Scylla was very wise to recognise that.
Yeah, well,
and also, Bobby didn't have that much talent, to be fair.
Well, you never know because, you know, apparently he was a budding singer. He became a manager, didn't he? And then managed her career after
Brian Epstein died.
After Brian Epstein
died. But everyone in Liverpool was a budding singer.
Yes, I suppose so.
You know,
I suppose you're right. Worked in a bakery.
That was the era.
Scylla's career had all but gone until, what was that dating show called?
Blind Date.
Blind Date. I loved that show. That was her resurrection, wasn't it? That's right. Yeah, but I used to love that because in my naivety, of course, you know, and I wish the watched the first few shows, I thought, gosh, they get all these very witty people on, you know, giving all these witty responses to Scylla's questions.
Scripted.
Exactly. Yeah, they'd spent hours learning the
lines.
The lines, that's right, and all that kind of stuff.
But it was good and it was innocent and it had a charm to it, which these dating shows that are on television nowadays, I find them tacky.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, Love
Compare
Island.
That with Love Island. Yeah, I totally agree.
Oh, really?
I totally agree.
I just don't want to watch that. I need a shower after that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think only one couple out of that old blind date ever got married and Scylla went to that wedding. But, you know, you'd have thought that something more would have happened. But to me, it was old-fashioned in the sense they were courting each other rather than, oh, you know, let's have a shag, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And the girls were dressed very nicely. And
it
the guys
was
sweet. Were, it
What's
was,
your
yeah.
name and where'd you come from?
Yeah,
that
that's
was,
right,
That was
yeah.
the catchline, wasn't it?
That, all that kind of stuff. But think of the agony that Scylla went through after Bobby died and every day she woke up and he wasn't there. It must have been awful, mustn't it?
Of
when
course.
When you're that close
so you,
to somebody.
If you love somebody that deeply, I mean, it's what we all aspire to, isn't it?
Yes.
The one that we can share everything with.
Yes.
Your world. She
yes.
sang about it.
That's right, yeah.
And she'd found it. So to lose that is mighty hard.
Mighty hard. And in this documentary, she was fooling around with Ringo Starr. So, you know, again, being a huge Beatles fan and, you know, having been sort of absorbed by the Merseybeat scene of the 60s. You know, it wasn't just the Beatles and music and all that. I was over there every weekend watching Everton Football Club, you know. Liverpool were starting to conquer the world, Liverpool Football Club. There was so much about Liverpool that was so great. My dad took me to the Walker Art Gallery when I was about 8. I didn't realise they had art galleries in Liverpool because Liverpool was written off as a scallies town for decades, really, you know what I mean, without people appreciating what it is really all about.
And it had been such a majestic place.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, in the previous century, the
it was
century
one, it was
that.
Once the world's biggest seaport. That's how big it was. Sadly, some of that was based on the slave trade, you know, which we've all come to learn about these days. But trading-wise, it was probably more responsible for Britain's expansion of the British Empire's manufacturing base than any other port, bigger than Bristol, bigger than London in those days, you know. But
and during
anyway,
the war, of course, all the supplies for the armed forces came in via Liverpool.
If they weren't bombed, that's where my mum and dad were bombed out in Rock Ferry in Birkenhead, where they were bombing the Camel Aird, shipyards, you know. So that's all amazing stuff. And I love to see, you know, the interaction with Ringo and the people there. She was so full of fun. So there
well,
we go.
That was all home footage, wasn't it?
Yes.
Didn't they move house and they found all this stuff in the loft?
Yes, they did. Yeah, they did.
Home footage.
I think it was when they were clearing out a house in Dedham.
Yeah.
And the Dedham thing is amazing because I was in hospital for 7 months at Harefield Hospital, which is very close by. And sometimes my sister was allowed to come and get me at lunchtime and we could go to the pub and have a pub lunch in the garden. You know, I wasn't allowed to drink alcohol, obviously, but, you know,
You snuck one in here and there.
I did. I admit that. Yeah.
I know this about you.
But we would actually pass two very prominent houses. One was Sillars and the other was, I think it was Noel Gallagher's, not Liam Gallagher's. I think Noel Gallagher lived out there as well.
There's a lot of stars live in Dedham.
I've got a
friend who lives there and I go occasionally.
Yeah.
There's a pub there called the Green Man.
Green Man.
That we sometimes go to. And
there's two villages called Little and something. Denham,
yeah,
Little Bucklow or Mucklow or something like
but
that.
But you go round and they'll point out the house. Oh,
that's
so-and-so
right.
lives there. Oh, that's so-and-so's
that's
house.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. But anyway, Cilla Black, what a wonderful memory. Now, getting on to darker issues, you've also had a bit of experience, haven't you, with Mr. Weinstein, yeah?
I met him twice.
Weinstein,
as they call him nowadays.
Weinstein, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
I met him twice, once in Cannes at the film festival.
Yes.
And once in Los Angeles.
Yes.
He had the most extraordinarily beautiful wife, Georgina.
Yes.
And
that was his second or third wife, wasn't it?
Yeah, she's very young, very pretty. And
yes.
she had her own fashion label.
Yes.
Marquesa, I think it's called.
Right.
And you'd look at them as a couple.
Sorry, which town did you meet him in again?
In Cannes at the film festival,
first of all, and then in LA. Right, okay,
I was living there.
Yes.
And this was a couple you'd look at and you'd think, what the hell is she doing with him?
Yes.
And there was only one reason. Well, maybe two. Maybe it's the same reason. Power and money.
Yes.
Because if he'd have been looking like that, a bus driver, and also vulgar and gruff, and really not very intelligent, didn't come across as very...
Really?
No, not at all.
He did exceptionally well in
not
life,
sophisticated.
Didn't he?
Before he was a thug.
The worst side of him came out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I suppose. But he did have some talent making films, didn't he?
But no charm.
He must have had. Oh, certainly no charm.
A producer isn't a creative. I think a lot of people make this mistake that...
A producer sort of creates the film, or they don't.
They're the money guys.
Yeah, the producers put it all together
and then appoint
a director, don't they, to make the film.
Of course.
That's the way it goes.
Is
that Albert Broccoli does with the Bond films?
Well, his daughter now, or the wife, Barbara.
Yeah, Barbara Broccoli, that's right, yeah.
Broccoli.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know this is a naive thing to say, and I'm no oil painting, but I always thought he was such
You're not
an
that
ugly...
bad looking, Mike.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. Thank you very much indeed. Muhammad Ali used to go around and say, I can't understand why women are so attracted to me, so that Michael Parkinson would always say, but Ali, you're a very handsome man. Oh, shucks, I just wanted you to say that, you know. But
he was.
Yeah, well, of course he was, yeah. But, no, I mean, I thought he was a slob of a man, you know, physically. And I agree with you, no manners, you know, seem to... the greatest... Who was it? I think it was either Harry Truman or... Franklin D. Roosevelt, American president, who said, the greatest exercise of power is the restraint with which you use it, which is a great expression,
isn't it?
Because you don't have to be a bully. You just, I think Franklin D. Roosevelt or Harry Truman said, speak quietly and carry a big stick, you know what I mean, behind your back and that kind of thing. Whereas with Weinstein, of course, he never stopped letting people know who was the boss, who was the king, who was in charge and all that kind of stuff, did he?
And Tinseltown is a horrible place where, you know, people flock there because they want to make it. They want to be in the movies.
Yeah.
They will do anything.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there is a breed of women who will... go to the casting couch, for want of a better expression.
That's happened since time immemorial.
I'm afraid it has.
You know, how can I get on in life? Well, there is one way you can. Funny enough, watching Coronation Street this week, that was part of one of the plots of Coronation Street. You know, a bullying bloke who ran a wine bar and a few other businesses, and you know, he had a blackmail hold over a young lady who was trying to be a barmaid. She'd committed a petty crime. You know, he was going to report her. It's been going on forever.
So I'm not casting aspersions, just to be clear, on the ladies who took him to court, who he raped. Because he's been found guilty of having raped them.
Yes, he has.
But he would
sexual assault and rape third
and
degree.
In his mind, he would take it to mean that because certain women had said yes to him,
yes,
that he could have anybody he wanted.
Yeah.
And you made the point when we were discussing this earlier,
yeah,
about, yeah, well, a couple of them went on to
That's
have
right.
continued relationships
That's right.
with him. Well, this is about control.
Yes.
So your rapist, your thug, mm. who will come along and take what he wants without your permission,
yes,
will then coerce you into some kind of ongoing friendship,
yes,
in which he convinces you he can still do yeah. something for your career.
Yeah.
He can still have power in the studio system. And
yeah.
so they will feel that inherently wrong about this, that,
yeah.
that he has abused them.
Well,
but because he can still do X, Y, and Z for them,
yes.
that this is worth maintaining the relationship.
Mm.
And that is a horrible form of control.
Well, funny you should say that, but I saw an interview with a lady called Mimi Haley just this morning. She's doing a tour of Britain now, you know, with her lawyer, by the way. And she was asked that very question by Suzanne on Good Morning Britain, you know, Suzanne who works with Piers. What's
yeah, 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 can't remember.
Yeah, I can't.
She's nice though.
Yeah, she's very nice, yeah. And she said, look, don't the lawyer actually then jumped in and said, don't you understand, people like Weinstein convince their victim that they can pursue a normal relationship prior to the offence taking place because it doesn't really matter. It won't change anything. And the victim then becomes grateful. They're not going to be discarded after having been used, you know. And it's a psychological trick which all bullies try and work time and time again with him. So when I originally thought, how could that woman possibly get a jury to believe that she was attacked, raped, sexually assaulted or whatever, when she kept on sending this guy emails afterwards? It is, as you quite rightly say, the modus operandi of the bullying sex attacker.
And the control freak.
And the control freak.
And let's not forget how much courage it takes for these women to go public with what happened to them.
Yes.
And every last nitty-gritty detail is dragged out of them in court. And then that's splashed all over the world's media.
Yes.
So we all know the inside out, you know, the shape of his penis, the, you know, the, the
don't
exact...
Don't want to know that, actually.
You know, the exact kind of details of what he did to them. Imagine how exposed you would feel. And I know a rape victim. I know someone who was raped by someone she knew.
Shocking.
In a club in London.
Yeah.
Who did go to the police and there
this doesn't involve Weinstein.
No. But this just to say that I know a little bit about this. A powerful guy.
Yeah.
And she was actually... Rohypnol was put into her drink.
Right.
Which is a date
rape drug. The date rape drug, yeah.
She was raped in a club.
Yep.
She
yep.
went to the police.
Yes.
And she was told that she had to go public with his name and with what happened to her.
Yeah,
otherwise, they were not going to bring a conviction.
Yeah.
So...
And
yes,
did,
a lot of these
did
cases.
It proceed?
Are, no, because no, because she didn't want to. She didn't want her family to know, her kids to know. She thought this might be damaging to her career.
Yeah, sure.
So you've got the other side of the coin there.
Yeah.
And I think so many of these people say, well, if so and so raped you, why didn't you go to the police?
Yes.
Well, because they make it very difficult for women to be believed.
Yeah, sure.
Even now.
I accept that from all the details we've seen in the Weinstein case. Also, what a whimpering, you know, coward he was at the end, you know, going into court on a Zimmer frame.
Didn't that disgust you?
Absolutely disgust you. Give me some sympathy and all that.
A bit like Oscar Pistorius when he was, hobbling in on his, missing leg.
That's right.
Like, please feel sorry for me because, I didn't really mean to kill her.
I only blew my girlfriend away through a shut door. She didn't know I was on the other side with a gun.
That was another horrendous
case. But it was shocking. But the one thing I would say is that, you know, Weinstein, who of course gives decent men a bad name. There are decent people who work in all industries. You know, we always hear about these. Don't hear about the guys who, you know, spent 50 years in the movie industry, never had one allegation against them.
Well,
that
that's no
stuff.
Story, is it?
Well, of course, it's no story. But I'm
what
delighted.
A good guy Kirk Douglas was. You know,
well, exactly.
No story.
Kirk Douglas, 103, died. Will published just this week. Left $80 million and left it all to his charitable foundation. And why? Because his son Michael already has $300 million.
Exactly.
And Zeta Jones, Michael Douglas's wife, in her own right, has about the same. You know what I mean? So you're talking about huge amounts of money. But no, what I was going to say is that he's going to Rikers Island. He's in Rikers Island now. He was in hospital when he first came out of hospital. They put him in Rikers Island. And when you go into Rikers Island, you may as well pass through
that
gate at the Tower of London.
Yeah.
You know, all ye who pass through this gate, you know.
Indeed.
There is no mercy. And
do we feel sorry for him, though?
I don't feel sorry at all for him. But what I would say is...
You wouldn't want to go there yourself.
No, you wouldn't go there yourself. In the summer, it's called the oven, because there is so much concrete and metal, i.e. concrete walls, metal bars, metal doors, all that kind of stuff, that they can't build an air conditioning unit sufficient to give any sort of comfortable temperature. And men die in their cells of heat. They get, you know, they kind of get cooked to death. You know
That's
what I mean?
Charming,
yeah, yeah,
it?
Yeah. It's just the most hideous place.
How do we feel about that? I mean, is that inhumane? Should we not be caring for prisoners?
Well, I mean, that, you know, it's a very good question. The point is, in America, if you do bad in America, you pay. That's always been the way the Americans have looked at it. You know, don't expect sympathy from me, buddy. You did wrong. We got you. You're going away. Rikers Island is 10 different jails on the same bit of land called Rikers Island, at the top of the East River. And once you go there, you never come back. You're absolutely right. You might go to another equally horrendous jail somewhere else in America.
Well, there's the Wende Correctional Facility, isn't there, in New York State, which is where Mark Chapman is, who killed John Lennon.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky, and I'm delighted that I'm with Leslie Ann Jones, and we have been discussing one very nice, light and bright subject, that's Cilla Black, the other one, of course, Mr. Weinstein, who will not see daylight again. Now, getting back to your audio showbiz contacts, this is a bit of a showbiz podcast, folks, but it is because everything's happening. Coronavirus, right?
Now, COVID-19.
Yeah. Now, coronavirus is obviously going to be a bit of a problem for all of us. But I noticed that Mr. Tom Cruise, the guy's a legend, isn't he? For all sorts of reasons, but mostly because he's a great actor, was in Italy. In Europe, Italy is now the focal country.
It's the epicenter.
I think they've got about 8 cases there, something
11
like that.
11 deaths in the last few days and hundreds more infected.
Not in Italy, though, no?
Yeah, I think so.
In Italy? Well, people have died already?
Yeah, they have.
Well, I wasn't sure about that. But you're probably right. But he's left. Now, this reminds me of the 80s, right? And in the 1980s, when the IRA were very active in this country, every time there was an unfortunate attack, and, you know, people sadly did die in these attacks, or some horrendous attacks, you know, blowing up horses and blowing up Harrods and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Any Americans in this country would either go home, or if they were on their way and about to come here, they wouldn't come. And that seems to me to be the way the Americans looked at it. They never used to have any internal terrorism. They didn't know what it was about. Of course, since 9/11, they've had the biggest internal terrorist attack in the history of the world. But Tom Cruise himself, is he somebody you've had dealings with?
Yeah, and there's a whole chapter about him in my book Tumbling Dice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And is this a favourable chapter?
Yes and no. Mm. I was the London stringer for, you'll know, the American entertainment programme, E! Entertainment.
Oh, absolutely.
And I was their London stringer. I remember I was filming a piece in the street in Soho about Tom Cruise.
Good.
And it was all to do with the structure of his anatomy, shall we say.
Really?
Mm.
Well, why would anybody want to talk about the structure of Tom Cruise's anatomy?
Have you ever thought about why all his wives dump him?
It's a very sensitive subject for a male member of the race.
Member being the operative.
Well, yeah. Exactly. It's, that's a very precise word. But no, I haven't. But I would say that basically what you're saying is that if a woman suddenly, and let's not talk about Tom Cruise specifically, but if a woman suddenly goes around saying, I'm getting rid of my husband because actually his appendage is not big enough, I think that woman is a disgraceful individual. Don't you?
Are we? We're not exactly saying, are we, that anyone has gone around saying that?
Well,
you
seem to be hinting in that sort of direction.
I have no direct personal experience. Let's be clear.
Mm-hmm.
But rumours abound.
Well, no. That's rumours. I mean, the rumours are bounding about everything. You
if
know.
He ain't keeping Goodness her gracious. Satisfied, well, why would she not look elsewhere?
Dear me, I thought you were going to tell me some great stories about interviewing Tom Cruise, you know, and he makes great revelations about the Church of Scientology, and all you're telling me about is the size of a man's, trouser department essentials.
No, I'm not casting aspersions, but, yeah. Okay, you want to talk about Scientology? Now there is a sinister organisation.
Well,
Do you remember, actually, on this very street, on Tottenham Court Road...
Right.
Where we are recording today.
Here in London.
Right outside Gooch Street,
we're
Tube
at,
Station.
Maple Street created, by the way.
For
lovely
many
bunch of
years,
people, thank
when
you.
I was
Sorry.
First in the workplace,
yes.
You come out of the Tube Station and then there'd be somebody standing there with a clipboard waiting to sign you up to come along to the Church of Scientology, which was on this very road.
Yes.
And they would send you in for an interview and try and coerce you into...
The Church of Scientology is on this road, is it?
On Tottenham Court Road, yeah, right by Gooch Street.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you two things about the Church of Scientology. First of all, they've got a huge place over by Blackfriars Station, because sometimes when I've done TV, I get dropped back at Blackfriars. It's easy to get down into Surrey there. And you go down that road, down the hill to Blackfriars station. And I'm not joking. There's Regency buildings on the right for about 100 yards, all say Church of Scientology.
Oh, well, they've got a lot of money.
They've got a lot of money.
And because they go for rich people.
They go for rich people.
Isn't John Travolta a member as well?
Oh, yeah.
I believe he is. Yeah,
I'm sure he is.
And that very lovely, busty actress with loads of hair.
Loads of hair. Anna Nicole Smith, who's dead, isn't she?
No, the one she's dark-haired, she's raven-haired, and she's put on weight, lost weight, put on weight.
Did she play Wonder Woman or something like
that?
No, I don't know.
Anyway, whoever
but
she
the other
is.
Thing is, down in Sussex once, I was driving down through Sussex going to probably Chichester or some race course down there, maybe, what's the great race course down there? Glorious Goodwood, going to Goodwood. And you come around this roundabout, and there's this huge pair of gates on the other side. Church of Scientology. Mm. It's their country place.
Begs all the questions, doesn't it?
Sorry?
It begs all the questions.
But
Katie Holmes got rid of him, didn't she? Wasn't she his kind of latest wife?
No, Tom Cruise's first wife was Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, but the latest one.
They were
Katie
in a film
Holmes.
Together where they ran
eyes,
off to America.
Eyes Wide Shut, they did.
No, but they did a previous one. They were Irish immigrants, went off to America and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Remember? Anyway, doesn't matter. I think he's been a great actor during his
Don't
time.
Do you think he generally plays himself?
Well, he might play himself, but if himself is the pilot in Top Gun, which is my favourite ever film, I don't mind him playing himself.
Did
you know.
He really act in that?
Yeah, I think he did.
Was
he
not
was
kind
great.
Of the same character in Rain Man?
In what? Rain Man?
Yeah.
Now, Rain Man, was that the guy who had
Dustin
autism?
Dustin Hoffman, yeah.
He might have been. I can't really remember much about that film.
He doesn't have a lot of bandwidth as an actor, for me.
Yeah, well, you may well be right.
There's no intrigue. There's nothing I want to dive
what was
into.
What was the series he played in? Was it Mission Impossible?
Maybe.
Yeah, didn't he play some sort of secret agent?
You
in
see,
that
I can't remember, so
anyway,
that tells you everything, doesn't it?
Anyway, listen, I'll tell you what I want to talk to you about, right?
Go.
Because we have such a lot to talk about and so little time. But this is Planet Porky, listen to, folks. Usually about 35 minutes, actually, which people seem to like. I want to talk to you about hair salons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why I want to talk to you about hair salons, because I read almost everything every day, as much as I can. Now, there's a town called Ashford, and Ashford used to
be...
Ashford in Kent, well done. And it used to be a market town. And then I think it became like a railway hub, didn't it, for...
you can get the Eurostar from there now.
That's right,
you can
exactly.
put your car on the train and go
that's,
over...
That's right.
Or through the channel.
That's right. But
do we still call it the channel?
No, I don't.
Anyway.
No.
The Channel Tunnel.
Channel Tunnel, yeah. But that's a bit out of town. But Ashford still pride themselves on a market town. Now, you know that the high street is under pressure, obviously, because of online shopping and, you know, what is it, Amazon and all this kind of stuff.
You can't get a haircut on Amazon, can you?
No, but this is the very point. Ashford now have just registered their 28th hairdressing salon in less than a square mile in the city centre.
Now, how are they doing business? How are they making any money?
Right.
Are there enough people to service all those hairdressers?
No, there aren't.
So this is a front for something, obviously.
Now, somebody told me this, right, because I live in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, and I noticed in two towns there, which I pass through regularly, a collective of hairdressing salons around the station in each town, OK? In fact, in one, I came out of the station, there's one right next door, there's one immediately across the road, there's two down to the left, there's another one down to the right, and I'm thinking again, I don't get this. And if you walk past them, Most of the time, this is my personal experience. Yeah. They are empty.
Nobody in there. So this is a cover for something else.
Well,
it's got to be.
What's
going on in the back room?
Where I live now in Stockbroker, we still have what you call community police officers, okay? And they're great people because they do really want to help. They don't have a lot of power. They're sort of, they're attached to the police service, but they're eyes and ears on the street, which is good and all that kind of stuff. Now, they told me that there are certain businesses which can launder huge amounts of money through hairdressing salons. And by the way, I'm not naming any individual hairdressing salon because I'm not pointing the finger at anybody. Because, for instance, the place I go to in one of the towns I visit is an absolutely straightforward, legitimate business, as many of them are. But the thing is, if you, for instance, register 10 customers that day, all paying 50 quid for a haircut, that's £500. And over a week, that's £2,500. And you multiply that by four hairdressing salons, which is £10,000. And you multiply that by 50 weeks, that's £500,000. You are providing a reason for a lot of money in cash to be flowing through that business. Now, I hope I'm not going to get, irate hairdressers ringing up after they listen to this saying, how dare you? I just cannot understand how 28 hairdressers in a small market town can possibly exist.
Well, there aren't that many customers in a small market town. So they're not going to be coming from outside, or are they getting off the train from France or wherever else in Europe,
having a cheap haircut
in Ashford? Exactly.
No.
So what's going on then?
I've seen this in restaurants as well. Okay. I'm smarter than the average bear. And again, I've seen restaurants which seem to...
empty all the time, not doing any business.
They're empty all the time, but they change their fascia about every 18 months.
Yeah.
They become, the chicken and chop house or something like that.
They
and then
do.
18 months later, they change into like a Mexican or something like that. But there never seems to be anybody in them. Mm. Now, what I'm saying is, right, if I am making these observations... surely other people, like the authorities...
Where's the guy from HMRC? Why isn't he checking it out?
Exactly.
Because he checks the rest of us out.
Exactly.
They're right down my throat the whole time, and I'm sure they're down yours.
They are all the time. You're absolutely right. And in fact, a mutual friend of ours, Eamon Holmes, spoke out just a week ago about the fact that he feels he's being unjustly targeted now.
Well, he's in hot
water,
isn't he?
Yeah, you know.
£250,000 tax bill he's just had.
Yeah, absolutely. And what he's saying is that he was... encouraged when he started working as a freelance broadcaster to be tax efficient, which we all want to be. And now somebody's changed the rules and said that's not tax efficient, that was tax avoidance.
So the rule is,
tax evasion.
Yeah,
even.
The rule is that you have to have several clients.
Yes.
And if he's working for one channel all the time, that's not one client, that's a job.
Yeah.
So you can see where they're coming from.
Well, I had
but he was ill-advised.
I had a colleague at TalkSport, right? Very decent chap, very straightforward. And it was obvious to everybody that he worked for a multiple number of people. He worked on TalkSport, but he was also a top script writer for lots of comedy programmes, including Harry Hill. He used to host live events, right? So that's three different sources of income already, which we know about publicly. And he's also a professional writer, so he was writing for other people. And they came after him. And you're absolutely right. The mark of it is, the BBC, some of the people there sailed too close to the wind. They had two shows on the BBC, but they were putting themselves up as freelancers, right? And they were taking the money and then sorting it out through their accountants as their own private companies. But the only source of their income was the BBC.
Yeah, well, to me, that's cut and dried. If you work for
exactly.
the national broadcaster,
exactly.
then you
yep.
are on the staff
yep.
and you should pay tax accordingly, PAYE.
Yes.
Sorry. And anything else can be taxed in a freelance capacity.
Yes.
But there can't be rules for them and rules for us.
No, absolutely.
That ain't fair.
Absolutely.
And I'm sick and tired of all that.
So am I.
I've
been hammered with tax over the years.
Me too. And look at the millions we've paid in tax.
Absolutely. I had a bum accountant once. Thing is, when you're earning lots of money and
don't keep an eye on it so well.
You're absolutely right. You're in your middle years, okay? Mm-hmm. So when I was in my late 30s, early 40s, I was
busy.
Yeah, great money.
You do that. That's your job.
Lovely apartment, second home, no problem at all. And all the time, the financial advisor I had, who was the guy who did all my mortgages, for property, would say, you're paying far too much tax, change your accountant. And I said, I can't be arsed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because exactly every time that. I went to see an accountant, he'd say, what we'll do is we'll completely restructure. Don't pay any more PAYE. We do this. You'll reduce it to 20%. I just could not be arsed,
and
honestly.
And then you get a headache and you think, yeah, no, it's just easier to let this arsehole carry on doing it.
Well, all I used to do was look in my bank account and say, oh, I've got plenty of money. Yeah. I don't really need any more, you know, so I'm okay. My God, if I reckon I overpaid by about 200 grand, okay. And of course, then when later your work load starts pairing off.
To dwindle, because it does naturally.
Yeah, of course it does
naturally.
You wish
you had that money now.
Yeah, and you'd think, God, I could do that now, actually, and do something with it. No, you're absolutely right. So on that basis, we've all fallen foul. But I still will support any colleagues of mine who are getting hammered by the tax man because they changed all the rules without giving you any notice. They were changing the rules. And it's a bit like Gordon Brown telling us, look, go out and all buy diesel cars and I'll knock the cost of diesel down to below petrol and this will be good. Until somebody discovered that actually diesel cars are far more poisonous than petrol cars. And now anybody's got a diesel car is being hammered on tax because they're more poisonous.
And don't tell me they
didn't know that. It was the politicians who got it wrong.
They knew that in the first place. They knew
they
were toxic.
If they should have.
There was some scam going on here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same as there's a scam going on with electric cars now.
Yeah,
you know, we ridiculous. All know that the components of batteries are going to be far more toxic for the environment, for the planet.
Right. They're
going
to have to dig
up half
of Africa, right?
There you go.
On cheap labour, on
and
very
it's
cheap
3-year-old kids going down the mines to get the lithium out and things like
lithium, cobalt, all these type of things to make these. And then, and I keep telling people, but nobody will understand.
I do.
Yeah, you do understand. If all the cars in this country ran on electricity and you had to plug your car in, you'd have to build 3 more nuclear power stations.
A week.
Just to provide the amount of electricity.
Calm down, dear. You're getting
to keep them all going. I am, yeah. I'm a bit,
He's gone all red.
Listen, talking about Africa, I want to tell you about something else. This is Africa and South America. I have discovered, now, I'm never, ever going to eat cashew nuts again.
Oh, why? I had some for breakfast. What's happened?
Please stop eating them. Right.
Okay, tell me.
What happens is these cashew nuts are grown in African countries, right? But they have to be shelled before they become a cashew nut that goes into a plastic bag.
Yeah.
They're not like pistachios, which come in the shell. You
pistachios?
Know what I mean?
Pistachios? Got any sober ones? Sorry. Hey?
Oh, yeah. That was a joke by Leslie Ann, folks. No, you know what I'm saying? The pistachios can be harvested off the tree and put in a bag. The which ones are I talking about?
Cashews.
The cashews have to be shelled to be clean. And guess what? The people who do them lose their fingers.
No.
There is so much acid.
No.
I'm not joking. There is so much acid in the cover to a cashew nut. These poor women in India and places, Sri Lanka, Ceylon and places like... Oh, Ceylon is Sri Lanka, isn't it? India, Sri Lanka, and I think it's Bangladesh and places like that. They've lost their fingers.
Oh,
they've lost the use of their fingers.
I can't bear it.
So I put out a tweet saying, I'm not ever eating cashew nuts again. Have you seen the way they're manufactured? Always gets a load of abuse, you know.
Of course.
Saying, you know,
we know about Twitter. Yeah. It attracts the nutters.
Yeah.
People without a forum to say anything anywhere else are going to steam in and have a go at you on Twitter.
Absolutely.
I've told you before, don't reply to the nasty ones.
Sometimes.
Engage with the nice guys
and
have a good conversation.
Yeah.
But anybody else does not deserve your time.
No, you're absolutely right. And just one final thing on that. So then, of course...
I hate what you've just told me.
It's horrendous.
I
I'm never going
to
eat a cashew nut again.
As of today.
Look it up because, you know, you'll see where it all comes from.
So why aren't we stopping the imports of these things?
Well, what I don't understand is that people all the time are mounting campaigns against people who eat meat and all that kind of stuff. Well, please, those people out there, mount a campaign, will you, against these poor women in India and the subcontinent of Asia who are losing their fingers through acid.
That is a disgusting thing.
It's absolutely disgusting. And children as well, of course,
are
doing the job. But the other thing I was going to tell you, which is really fascinating, avocado.
Oh, yeah.
Avocado on toast?
Avocado.
Avocado on toast.
Okay, so I take issue with you here, Mike, because we've talked about this.
Yep.
And you have blamed the Islington set for their avocado on toast causing the crisis, which is causing people in South America to be killed and hounded over this.
Avocado is worth more than cocaine now in Mexico.
They don't only grow them in South America.
They do.
No.
One third of the world's avocados come from Mexico.
All right, let's get them from Israel and let's stop importing from South America.
That's not happening because of the cartel gangs in South America are managing to harvest them so cheaply because they are literally gangsters, and gangsters don't pay for their goods, right?
Well, let's
They're
not
stealing
do
them.
Business with those
well,
guys.
Well, you try to tell somebody
that.
Do
you remember when we were kids at school
yep.
and apartheid was going on in South Africa?
Yes.
So we were not importing Cape grapes at
yep.
that time,
yep.
all kinds of other fruit from South Africa,
yes.
and we were getting our fruit from elsewhere.
Yes.
So why can't we do the same now?
Because there's not the political will anymore, because the people in Islington and North
Bob
London...
Where's Bob Geldof? That's what
yeah,
we
where
mean.
Is Bob Geldof? They don't mind having the old avocado on toast, but
it's
if they knew...
people
are dying.
Islington,
people
right?
are being hanged in their homes for, you know, daring to challenge the avocado gangs.
Okay, but hang on a minute. So you're
yeah.
saying that...
Yeah.
We in South East London, we Dulwich dwellers,
yes, the Dulwich
are
mob.
Not eating avocados because we do. So we can't blame the Islington set.
Well, okay, I'm blaming you as well then. That's another thing. I won't eat any more avocados
so
because children are being
them.
Murdered.
But in
and
the
their
meantime,
parents are being murdered for avocados on toast.
So we need to stop importing them. And that's where
yeah.
we need to go with the government on
okay.
this.
Okay.
Avocados and cashew nuts.
Okay, if that's what you think.
What else should we ban?
Well, I'm not a banner because once you start banning things, you'll ban others. Ban fox hunting. The next thing they want to ban is fishing. And you can bet your life. I'm not a fisherman. In fact, I can't stand smelly fish and
Do
all that kind
fish?
Of stuff. Oh, yeah, I love fish.
Do
I love
you
eating fish.
I
cook fish, yeah.
I can't stand cooking fish in
yeah.
my house.
Oh, yeah, no,
house
I love it.
It stinks for days.
Well, you know, it doesn't matter. You've got to cook. I only put it in the oven anyway.
Yeah, I'll eat it in a restaurant, but not
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
want to cook it.
I get it from Waitrose in sealed plastic trays.
We're plastic.
Yeah,
so we
yeah.
contaminating the oceans
and I,
with
and
plastic.
I just put it in the oven and warm it up. It's as simple as that, you know,
yeah.
with the croquette
How bad
potatoes.
Do you feel about the plastic?
I don't feel bad at all about it. I think that an awful lot of myth about, you know, plastic and waste and all that. We have to have these things, you know. You have to have mineral resources out of the earth. You have to have petroleum. You have to have gas. And anybody who thinks differently is, in my mind, a woke. Right, folks, you have been listening to Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed. We can finish on that very issue, Leslie Ann, and thank everybody for being with us.
I remember I was filming a piece in the street in Soho about Tom
right.
Cruise.
Good.
And it was all to do with the structure of his anatomy, shall we say.
Really?
Mm.
Well, why would anybody want to talk about
well,
the structure of Tom Cruise's anatomy?
Have you ever thought about why all his wives dump him?
Well, now, this, as you see, is a very sensitive subject for a male member of the race.
Member being but, the operative.
Well, yeah. exactly. It's, you know, that's a very precise word. But, no, I haven't. But I would say that basically what you're saying is that if a woman suddenly, and let's not talk about Tom Cruise specifically, but if a woman suddenly goes around saying, I'm getting rid of my husband because actually his appendage is not big enough, I think that woman is a disgraceful individual.
Well,
don't you?
Are we? We're not exactly saying, are we, that anyone has gone around saying that?
Well,
yeah,
you seem to be hinting in that sort of direction.
I have no direct personal experience. Let's be clear.
I mean, I thought he was a slob of a man, you know, physically, and I agree with you. No manners, you know, seem to. The greatest. Who was it? I think it was either Harry Truman or Franklin D. Roosevelt, American president, who said, the greatest exercise of power is the restraint with which you use it. That's another thing. I won't eat any more avocados
so
because children are being
them.
Murdered.
But in
and
the
their
meantime...
parents are being murdered for avocado on toast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.